Session number 17395, Reel 1.
Mr. Norton, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Great Yarmouth, 11th 31.
Did you go to school in Great Yarmouth?
Yes, Cobham Senior School. Left at the age of 14.
Did you get a job?
I started work when I was 14 as an apprentice electrician for 12 months, and then I went into the furniture trade and worked through the furniture trade the rest of my life, apart from my 2 years national service.
So you were obviously a schoolboy in Yarmouth during the war.
I was. Well, I was evacuated to a place called Bingham or Cropple Butler near Nottinghamshire for two or three years, and then we came back home just after the war.
Was that the whole school that was evacuated?
No, they done the whole mass, the whole Corbin Island. I was in Corbin Island in Yarmouth, a place called Cobham, and it was a mass exodus from Yarmouth, from Vauxhall Station, all families of all children of under a certain age whose mother wanted them to go, and we were all labelled up and sent to the one big reception point in Nottingham somewhere, and we were all labelled and then sent to our different families to where we would stay until the duration of the war or whatever, until the time came it was safe enough for us to come back to our hometown.
So you didn't go as a school?
Not from a school thing, from a parents thing. It was all organised, government organised thing, you know.
Do you remember the date that
No,
was,
I don't
or
know.
Which year it was?
No. I don't know, 46, something like that. I think I was possibly about 9 years old.
So it should be about 1940 then?
About 40, yeah, that would be. And my two brothers, older brothers than me, were linked up with me in Nottingham, but then we were separated. My two brothers went to live in one place and I was in another. But I was young and upset, and they actually got me back with my brothers into another.
Was it just homesickness?
Yeah, homesickness, and really, you know, I suppose I went to pieces really all the time, and I think they realised that at the time. I remember it quite well, and they finally got the lady who had my two brothers agreed to take me with them, and I spent the rest of the time there with them.
And the place was Bingham, you said?
It was Bingham, Keyworth, a place called Keyworth. What happened was, I think where I was with my two brothers, the lady didn't treat me too kindly, and then in the end my mother moved down into Keyworth, and I was eventually taken to her and lived with her in Keyworth. And then I believe my mother had to move because my father being in the Merchant Navy, he had to move down to Milford Haven, and I went to live with my mother in Milford Haven during the war. And from then we went after the war, or just before the war finished, we came back home, carried on our life from Great Yarmouth, where I've been ever since.
What was the problem with the lady who didn't treat you properly?
I don't know. She just didn't take to me for some reason or another, and she led me a real terrible time, and my mother got to know, and she came down and saw and said that she would have me with her, you know, and if, I suppose what it was, the social services in them days, they arranged that I came or went to live with her.
Was it much different in Nottinghamshire and Milford Haven?
No, we used to travel from Keyworth into Nottingham on the Trent buses and Derbyshire when my father came home from, he was on the he was the first engineer on one of the minesweepers in the Merchant Navy, the trawlers, what they turned into, minesweepers and things like that. And he was down there and occasionally came on. And when we came on, we used to trip into different places around the area which were accessible from the Nottingham to on the Barton buses, which are the Trent Barton buses. And vaguely things I can remember. Down on the harbour at Milford Haven, fishing, and then I remember the German bombers coming over, and we were out cockling on the mud flats. The tide was coming in, and we see the German planes come over and strafe the Pembrokeshire docks and the oil tanks. And two or three days later, we went back down the wharf, and there was one or two signs up about swimming. We went in swimming, and the water was absolutely full of oil, and we came out full of oil, burning. And I remember I don't know whether they were Scotch girls or whatever, but they were down there with the nets and the swimming, and they took us in and cleaned us down with the spirit from the oil all over us. So it was about 10 or 11. My two brothers was with us, and I remember being cleaned down from the oil, which was after the German bombers had strafed the oil tanks into the Pembroke docks, I believe they were, Milford Haven, and one or two of the things I remember. And I believe we came home from there back to Yarmouth.
So the island, the
sea, was because of the bombing of the oil tanks on the Premiership, Milford Haven docks.
Any other memories from the war that we can record that happened?
Not only that, the time, it wasn't all of the war. We lived in, most of the time, every evening at a certain time, the siren would go. And our house on Granville Road never had an Anderson shelter. We got a Morrison shelter at a later date, but our neighbour had an Anderson shelter, which was the outdoor shelter. And I think most of the nights we spent in there, about 8 or 9 of us, in the Anderson shelter. When the crash warning went, the siren was okay, we just hung about a little bit. And as soon as the crash warning went, that was a sign that we had to take cover. And we'd spend the rest of the night in there till 7 in the morning, numerous times, hundreds of times, in the shelter. Sometimes we got out when the bombers came over and the doodlebugs. We heard the doodlebugs come over. We heard the engine stop. And we see the flashes and the bangs and the landmines that dropped in Cobham. And I remember Yarmouth getting... I was here when the Blitz of Yarmouth, the town centre. I remember going up in the morning over the Haven Bridge and watched the fire brigade knock down the walls with the hose pipes and put the fires out after the incendiary. Knocked the old Marks and Spencers, or where the Marks and Spencers is now, knocked that down. I saw the old Maypole shop knocked down with the hose pipes in the morning. And then everything after the war got quiet. And we used most of Middlegate area for a play area, which was all demolished by bombs. And in the end, they completely demolished it and built the flats what are there today.
So the power of the hose pipe could bring a wall down?
Well, wait, after it had been bombed and strafed, you know, and we used to watch it all. We watched all these things happening from the roadway, where you could get to the roadway, because there was a lot of bombs dropped in Yarmouth and a lot of property destroyed. And it was a nightmare for the Anderson shelter. It was really overcrowded, you know, and it used to sweat terribly, the water run down the corrugated tin onto the brick things. And there were sometimes 8 of us sleeping in there, you know, the family of brothers, sisters, and the ward, the ARP, used to be outside on the paths and just patrolling up and down the road with the watching for fires or any trouble. And And then we used to sometimes be let out as the crash warned on the finish, or just before, if we could get out and go outside with them and watch the things go over, the planes and the doodle bugs, as I said. Oh yes, that was an awful time as well.
Did you say crash warning?
Well, it was crash warning. First of all, you got the siren, which was the enemy approaching the area, and then you had a crash warning, which was the siren was just a whining thing, and then the crash warning was one loud blast, you know, a series. That was the crash warning. That meant that you had to get into a far better, secure shelter. Like either if you had a Morrison shelter, which was the indoor shelter, steel with a wire mesh around the outsides with about a quarter plate steel on top, the four posts. Some of the time we slept in there. But if the crash warning went, well, you would have to get possibly out of the house and into the Anderson shelter.
And did you say doodle bugs came?
Doodle bugs. We heard the doodle bugs, saw the flame from the end of the doodle bugs. And then you hear, you'd all of a sudden the engine would stop, and you'd think, oh, it was doomed for somewhere around you. But of course they travelled for miles and miles, and they were all destined for further afield, like into the middle, into the I said they came from the post line into further into the London, that area, going that way. Well, because sometimes you heard them, they were the ones that dropped short of the capital, I suppose, of what they were aimed at. But there was a lot that stopped, and you never heard no more of them. You know, you sometimes heard the bang, or you could see the flash of. Yes, we saw all that. I used to. Quite a worrying time for everybody, I think, you know.
Were you personally frightened?
Well, yes, I think everybody was frightened, to the fact, because we were actually under bombardment in the town itself. You know, I mean, if you look at the records, there was quite a considerable number of raids onto Yarmouth. I think possibly one of the second or third highest rated air raid warnings in the country. They did a lot of damage, and it was a worrying time. It was a frightening time, you know.
So how did public morale stand up, do you think?
I think it was pretty good, because in those days, people were more together, you know, more friendly. You knew more people. People would speak more, and everybody knew everybody on two or three roads away, you know. There was no... I never went short of food or clothing. My mother and my family... I had a good childhood, you know. We were never short of food, never short of clothes. And all of my school days, I had a good school day, a very, very good school life, and a happy childhood with my parents. My father was away most of the time. He was, as I say, first engineer on the, he used to do the fishing. And then he came in and done the pleasure boats at Yarmouth, the Oulton Bell, Norwich Bell. He was first engineer. And he went on the fishing boats in the September time, right through to the Scotch fishing. And Scotchmen used to come down here, and the Yarmouth boats and Loughborough boats used to go together. And he'd do the whole fishing season, and then I think he would finish, follow the herring round the south coast, and until the war. And then he was on the one of the transformed or modern. They changed them off to do empty minesweepers and things like that, didn't they?
What was your address in the war?
My address, 18 Granville Road, Cobham.
Is Cobham Great Yarmouth. Part of Great
Yes, Yarmouth? Just as you come over the Haven Bridge, down the bottom of the Haven Bridge, just turn right, first right at the traffic lights, and that is Cobham. It used to be an island. It's years and years, many, many years ago, but it's not an island, what they call Cobham Island. But it was 18 Granville Road. It was under 18 Granville Road, South Town, Great Yarmouth.
Was there any hatred of the Germans during the war?
Any?
Any hatred of the Germans during the war, do you think?
Not Not real, I don't think. Oh, I mean, I was young and I didn't mix with the. Obviously, nobody looked what was going on, you know, all of the bombing and the loss of life and the uncertainty of everything, of where the next bomb was going to drop, and it could quite easily have dropped on gravel road as well as any other road. In fact, I think there was a landmine, the big aluminium pieces we found later on. I think there was a landmine dropped on the marshes behind me. My road was the last road in Cobham, and then there was the marshes and then the Braden Water. Because a lot of the time they reckon that they were after the Braden Bridge, which was the main railway line through from London through to Vauxhall Station. It's now gone away, and it's the roadway. It's the dual, you know, came over. That was the old railway line, and my house was just right of the railway line. That was Cobham Island, as you see, before you go over the big suspension bridge. On your right, the houses you leave before you go over the bridge is Cobham.
Did you ever think the Germans would win the war?
Well, no, I don't think I did, no. I mean, being, I suppose, my age, we always thought we were superior to them, you know. We would, I think in our own mind, we always thought we would come out on top. I think that was the general feeling of the people in this country, and especially in this area. Yes, I think I don't think anybody ever gave up the ghost. I mean, they put up with a lot of hardships, rationing. I had the ration books, and although I never went short of food, or clothing, or vitamins. There was a lot of stuff coming when I was at school, but from the Americans. Americans sent cod liver oil and chocolate drink and stuff, which we were given during the war.
So was the war for you a pleasant time, an exciting time?
I lost a tremendous amount of education because of the air raids. And we were in school and we had the big shelters built, like big tunnels, like brick underground and then the brick tops. And the sarm would go, and we would then, everybody in the school would make the way to the underground shelters. They were all lit up and seated. And I very, very often we would get to school at 9 o'clock, and by 10 o'clock we would be in the shelters. And we'd probably be in there all morning. There would be a lull, the all clear would go, and then if it was too late in the day, if it went through to 1 or 1:30, we would come home rather than go back into school and continue lessons. But very, very often, there weren't many days in a week that we didn't go into the shelters and just wait. And we did lose a lot of education. There's no doubt about that.
What were these underground shelters in Great Yarmouth?
They were at the school, behind the school, or at the side of the school. I don't know whether they've been demolished. We used to run on top of them. They were brick, like igloos, you know, and they went all the way around into sections, and duck boards on the floor, with seats at the side, lighting. And we used to go into them, and they were shaped into T's and dead ends, and we used to actually play on top of them, you know, run along the top of them. And but I've not been over to the school since I left it, 14 years old. And as far as I know, I don't know, but I don't know what they did, but not from down. I should imagine they did.
Were there any VE Day or VJ Day celebrations?
Yes, we had the V Day, VJ Day, I believe it was. Parties on the roadway from the, yes, we had those. We celebrated VE Day or VJ Day. I don't know if we celebrate the two or whether it was the VJ Day. I believe the VJ Day was probably the biggest celebration, I believe, because we knew then that was the end of the war, you know, as More than the, look, the European, the German war.
Now, you were just about to tell me, I think, about your being conscripted yourself.
Yes, I was called up at the age of 18 and enlisted in the... Well, they drew me in to report at Colchester in March 1950, I believe it was, end of March 1950. There I spent 6 weeks basic training with the Royal Norfolk Regiment. I then carried on a further...
Could you tell me what the basic training was like, how they treated you?
It was a hard training, very, very... coming from Civvy Street into the army, it was very, very, very strict, very, very regimental. And it wasn't nice, let's put it that way, although we had our weekends off, but it was 6 weeks we were actually under lock and key as such. For 6 weeks we were allowed out weekends, and but it was a very, very, very strict regime, very, very strict.
Was the treatment fair or abusive?
No, it was an army, a typical army career, army life, you know, strict, regimental training. Fairly, I mean, it was a hard, very, very hard and strict course. Very, very strict and hard course. And we'd done what we told, had to do what we were told. And I even remember one of the sergeants who trained me, Sergeant Nash. I remember him. And, you know, cold weather, we went through a lot of... We done rifle training, target practicing and bayonet charging, camouflage, weapon training, stripping down of bring gun and blindfolded and reassembled, map reading, camouflage, all that related to war, which I actually needed and actually went through in my later days of the army. A lot of the things that I learnt in Colchester became of great use in the future army life I had. You know, not that we had to strip down brain guns, things like that, but we used the brain guns. We had the brain guns with us. I knew about the brain gun and I knew about the other weapons, which was all of a great help to me. Camouflage, we knew about camouflage. We learnt a lot about camouflage and even map reading. If you ever needed it. No, it was a hard time, and we were glad it was over. And after I finished my 6 weeks, basically, you get a passing out parade, which is a great big event on the Saturday morning. You can have your family down or whoever to see you pass out on the parade ground. Each section or each platoon that was taken in had to march and do all your arms drill, and it was a magnificent day really for a train, knowing that you'd finished your training and you were going into normal army life. But then we were put on to a further 6 week jungle training. That was before ever anything was mentioned about where we were going or what was in the wind or whatever. We'd done our jungle training, another 6 weeks I believe we'd done, which was more severe.
Where was that?
In Colchester. We went to all the same courses and over a little bit extra water, involved more water, crawling, bit of firing, keeping low under barbed wire and stuff like that, which we didn't get in basic. Grenade throwing, numerous extra things that we didn't do in basic. And then that was over. We didn't get no passing out parade for that. It was part and parcel of your army, starting your army career. Then I was posted to the Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire Regiment. And we went to Warminster, Wiltshire, where we became the demonstration battalion in Warminster, Wiltshire, and our job was to demonstrate to different officers and the top brass of different parts of the world, the red caps and the majors, the brigadiers, and we would dig trenches.
But which battalion of the
Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire Regiment?
The 1st Battalion.
1st Battalion of the Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire Regiment. And we would dig trenches, and we would, in Salisbury, you had the materials and things to do it. We'd line the trenches with corrugated and scaffold pooling, steel pooling. When it was dug, the trenches were dug and lined and camouflaged. We would have an aerial photography come over and photograph what we'd done, and then we'd use some of those trenches and we'd have sort of night patrols and night manoeuvres on them in Salisbury. And it was quite a pleasant time. And then while I was at the camp in Warminster, Wiltshire, I believe, I don't know, but somebody said I was going to take a CADA course, which is a CADA course for NCO, but a notice came on the board for somebody to go and look after a Captain Starling, his wife. She was very, very ill in a big house in Warminster, and they wanted a volunteer to go and look after her as a nurse. And I got the job. And they sent me down, packed my gear, packed all my kit, went to this big house, just a walking distance of Warminster town itself. And this lady, this captain's wife, Captain Starling, he'd go off every morning to the camp where I was, when my brother was in that same camp, in S Company, a support company. That was a mechanic, mechanical side, brain gun carriers and what have you. And whilst I was there, I was looking after this major's wife. I just cooked them a breakfast and something light for lunch. I don't know what was wrong with the lady. I was a bit shy and I didn't go in the room very much. I used to write all my letters home to my wife or my girlfriend then on this big table overlooking the lawns, and it was lovely. And then she would call me in and she said, go down and get two nice cakes. And I would go down to Warminster and buy two nice cream cakes and bring them back. And that's all I saw of her. I was too shy to go in. You know, I had my boots on and polished floors. And I used to polish and dust and prepare her Sanatogen rolls, I remember she had in the morning. And then the Captain Starling would come home and he's Sam Brown's. And I would iron his Sam Brown ready for his meeting in the evening. And I remember walking back to, down to the camp. I used to walk from Warminster camp because I was billeted back into Warminster attached to the S Company. And they gave me a bed in one of the barrack rooms. And I used to just get up in the morning with Ravalli. I'd have my breakfast and then I'd make my way down to this Captain Stalin's house and spend the rest of the day there. And I would come back ready for my tea at the camp. And whilst I was doing that, the captain used to speak to me. And one day I remember getting in there wet and he said, take your clothes, he said, wear my suit, he said, wear my trousers and keep yourself comfortable. Well, I never did. Then one night, one evening, he came home and he says to me, Norton, he says, you've got to go back to the camp